families who've witnessed this will tell you, oh my God, I can't believe that worked. I can't believe, how do you do that?
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Welcome to episode 72 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for unnecessary medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. As I'm sure you know, caring for a person with Alzheimer's or another dementia is probably the most complex caregiving situation you can find yourself in. Although complex, there are simple adjustments to the way you provide care that can make huge positive differences and improve the quality of life for both you and your loved one. In this episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, Christy Turner shares some of these things with you. Christy, you told me before we came on the air that there are several simple or easy to incorporate things that families can do and that you've seen actually work in real life. And I'm looking forward to hearing you share these examples of how our care partners can incorporate simple things that make a world of difference for them.
I love this topic because I know dementia itself, just the diagnosis, it feels so overwhelming, and it's easy to feel like you're being drug in the undertow, caught up in the undertow of everything that has to do with dementia. But there are just, you know, small hinges swing very big doors. And so we can make some very small tweaks that really do make a world of difference. And what I am wanting for our listeners is to start getting some immediate wins, because I think we all love immediate gratification. And these are some things that they can do that will give them some immediate gratification and improve quality of life right away.
Yeah, I think in life in general, the more these small successes and we can have, the more confidence we build and the better things go forward. And I'm sure that's magnified greatly in dementia care.
I completely agree, Mike, because it is difficult and overwhelming when you first become a dementia care partner. So building confidence is really key for being able to move forward with your person and feel like you know what you're doing. Everybody hates being in a situation where they feel like they're just not really sure of themselves, of their skills, of what they should be doing, how they should be doing it. And while it's true there is a lot to learn, these are some simple things that people can start putting into practice right away.
That sounds wonderful. I was just thinking, you know, when we don't have that confidence and we have that fear, and we sometimes just shut down. And, you know,
So
hearing real world examples of how others have been successful, it's going to be a great help, I'm sure, to our listeners. So our first example is?
Well, paying attention to the little things, because again, dementia feels so overwhelming. Just we hear that word and it can lead to inaction, kind of that fear paralysis. So when we start paying attention to the little things, we can see huge differences. One of the things, and I say little things, but they're really significant, is environment. So if the TV is on all the time, that's not a positive. That can cause what we call agitation, which is kind of a vague word, but it can just get really annoying to, especially if it's like a cable news channel where the same thing sort of plays in an endless loop, and it can be confusing and it can just cause bad juju in the house. So if we eliminate TV, or particularly cable news, that's a great first step. Eliminate that. think Hallmark Channel, or if your person's really into sports, maybe some ESPN Classic, where it's not so much focused on Sports Center and breaking news, but more actually showing games. Those are better choices for TV. And of course, the ideal is not watching TV all day, but be particularly mindful of if you have TV on in one room and radio in another, that can just be really confusing for your person. And again, cause that annoyed feeling, and they start to get irritated, and that can come out through their actions. So just looking at what's going on in the environment can make really positive difference.
And if you mix all that stimulation with the activity of the family moving around, because oftentimes these are families that have cohabitated, right? So you might have some kids in the house, you might have people that get home from work, and you have all this action and the working on getting dinner ready and the to-do list. So it can, I can see a definite overstimulation potential there. So makes sense
right.
to me.
Right. We want to kind of pay attention to how much is going on all at one time, how many people are present. And of course, these are things that somebody's going to be able to manage more effectively earlier in the process. But as the condition continues to progress, folks have a little more difficulty doing self-soothing and kind of talking themselves through, okay, so everybody just got home, all this chaos isn't going to last very long. They're not able to do that for themselves anymore. So we want to give them an assist by our own actions.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. The second thing, and this is going to be no surprise to our regular listeners, is approach. So we want to come in with the good stuff always, and that is respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion. We want to be mindful of the energy that we are bringing into every interaction. So if you are just coming home from work and it's been kind of a crummy day at work and you got stuck behind a train in traffic and blah, 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 all of that stuff, leave it outside the house. Leave it in the car. Leave it outside the car. We're going to do that deep breathing where we just take a giant breath in and then exhale for a couple of beats longer than the inhale and get rid of the gunk. That's the scientific term for it. And then we want to do that at least four times, because on those third and fourth inhales, we're just going to be bringing in the good stuff. And there's as much of it as you want. You can have all you want. And then we're able to bring that energy into the house, share it with our person, and create really good vibes. So very important. And that's not any big revelation, like I said, to our regular listeners.
Now, Christy, I just had a vision of, since I brought up having other family members in the house, when it's more of a one-on-one, it's going to be a lot easier for our care partner to keep that energy positive. But when you have other family members coming in and being around, you're going to have to help educate them, too, about this positive energy and bringing the good stuff.
I think that's true. I think another thing that this is where I get, I don't really want to say militant, but I can't think of a better word for it. I get real serious and brass tacks about this. If your person lives with you and your sister is a negative Nelly and that's how she hits the door every time, I understand that you want to make sure that your sister still has access to your mom. I get that, but you need to lay it out for her. This is what works with mom. This is what doesn't. You can be as consumed by your problems as you need to be once you exit our home, but I can't have you bringing it in here. And setting those boundaries early are going to be really helpful, and your future self is already high-fiving you for doing that.
I like it.
Okay. Our next thing is looking at procedural memory, which is different than what we usually talk about with dementia when we're talking about memory loss. We're talking about people not remembering significant events in their life, typically, things like that. But procedural memory is how we do things. So for example, if we typically get up at 6 a.m. and the first thing we do is go into the bathroom, and the next thing we do is get coffee, and the next thing after that is sit at the table, and we have our certain chair we sit at the table, that is procedural memory. We don't really give it a whole lot of conscious thought. And people living with dementia still have procedural memory. So we can use that to our advantage. And here's a great example. I just worked with a client on this yesterday. So every morning there's an issue with, let's call him Joe, going into the bathroom and using the bathroom. And he needs some physical assistance, and it turns into a thing every morning between Joe and Marie, who is his wife and primary care partner. And Joe gets very angry that Marie is helping him. And so we walked through, Marie and I physically walked through this sequence yesterday. And I said, show me exactly how it's going. You be Joe, I'll be you. Let's go through this. And so we did. And I said, okay, now let's walk through it again. Okay, let's walk through it again. So we did it three times. She's looking at me like, what are we doing, Christy? And so the third time, I had a good idea in my head of, okay, this is where it is falling apart. This is where the problem is. So the first thing we started with was switching which side she's walking on. Because one of the issues is Joe gets to the door and just stops and says, well, what's in here? What's going on in here? And then Marie would launch into the reason and logic dance where she's trying to explain it to him, and it's too overwhelming to Joe. And so he decides he doesn't want to have anything to do with any of this. So we switched sides so that when they come into the bathroom, he's going to be in the bathroom rather than able to just stop at the door. Marie is now in that other spot. Then there's a sequence of being able to get closer to the toilet and turning around. And just by us making that simple change of where she's positioned in relation to everything else in the room, including Joe, it is going to allow her to help Joe without him getting angry about it. And we made a couple of other tweaks, but the point on procedural memory is how we can really use it to our advantage is if we're having problems with a certain routine, that, and that's what's going to use procedural memory, we can disrupt the pattern and sort of program in something else.
That's a very interesting concept. I don't believe I've ever talked about or read about or heard. And it's very interesting to me how just that simple review of the process and tweaking simply what side the care partner was walking on made such a big difference.
Yeah, it's really huge. And I think people that work in memory care in particular definitely understand this principle from experience. And how it usually happens in a memory care is we'll welcome a new resident into the community, and then it's time for dinner, and poor new resident walks up and sits down at the table, and all of a sudden another resident says, that's my chair. And then it's on and cracking if we don't intervene very quickly. And I think anybody who works in memory care has seen that happen. And people know where they sit, where their spot is at the table because of that procedural memory. So we can definitely use that to our advantage. I had another client, same thing, where it would turn into a driving situation. Every morning after breakfast, he would grab his keys, which were next on the key holder right next to the garage door, which is what he faced while he was sitting there at the breakfast table eating breakfast. And they'd lived in this house for 45 years, had this same routine for 45 years, but now he had Alzheimer's and wasn't able to drive anymore. And he'd grab the keys, and his wife would say, no, don't you remember? The doctor said you have Alzheimer's. You can't drive anymore. And it was off to the races from there. So a couple of the things we did there was change what time he got up in the morning to allow him to get the sleep that he needed instead of her continuing to wake him up at the same time every morning. We changed his clothes from professional clothes she'd always laid out for him every morning to golf clothes. So that was sending the signal that it was going to be a relaxed day, not a work day. And of course, he was retired, but he did not remember that. Then the third thing was we changed what they were eating for breakfast rather than what they had been eating for breakfast for 45 years. The fourth thing we changed was where they sat at the table. So she sat facing the garage door and he sat facing the patio. So they changed seats. And how we cued him to do that was she brought him his food as she had every day for 45 years, but she always had it sitting there by the time he came down from the bathroom. And so she, again, had it sitting out. And the first time that it happened, he said, "Well, where's my food?" And she said, "Oh, that's yours right there." And he said, "Oh, okay." And he just changed seats. That was all it took. And then we also, of course, removed the visual cue of the keys.
Right.
Covered that with the picture. And that was that. That disrupted that pattern. And in that particular situation, with a 45-year ingrained pattern, we did need to make multiple changes to really switch it up. But that completely disrupted the pattern.
I'm finding this extremely interesting. And what I'm thinking is, I've always heard, you know, keep things the same and keep the routines the same. And I think that has probably would have caused me to never want to make these changes. But I'm hearing from you that while we keep the routines, we're making tweaks, simple tweaks to them, that are making these huge improvements. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more examples in our second half of the show, because we're already over the halfway point.
Holy cow. So I do want to address what you said there, Mike, which is routine is very important for a person living with dementia because it gives them a sense of structure and predictability. So they're not having to guess kind of what's coming next. But like with everything else, we want to think, is this routine serving? Is it serving this situation? Is it improving our person's quality of life? Is it helping things go better, more smoothly? Or is it causing problems? And if it's causing problems, of course, we don't want to keep doing it. Another great change kind of related to that story that I was telling about my clients in the bathroom is we want to definitely talk our person through a task so they know what to expect and what's coming and don't feel like they're being assaulted, particularly when it comes to a bathroom situation. So we wouldn't want to just grab somebody's pants and pull them down. That would feel weird, even if it was your romantic partner.
Right.
We want for them to have a sense of agency and autonomy. Nobody likes something weird to happen on their body or feel like something is happening to them rather than them being a participant. So we would want to say something along the lines of, "Okay, Joe, I need you to grab this grab bar right here. Great. Now I am going to help you pull down your pants right here. Let's go. Good. Got it." So we're going to offer encouragement. We're going to speak concretely and concisely, because the flip side of this is some folks do have that natural instinct to talk their person through a task, but it sounds more like, "Okay, Joe, I need you to pull down your pants because if you sit down on the toilet with your pants on, that's going to create a big problem. So I need you to pull down your pants. Yeah, go ahead and grab onto the grab bars and I'm just going to pull them down here. Okay, we got them down. Now let's get your underwear down. Great. Now turn around." And it's just too much information for what somebody can process in that moment. So we want to slow it down and avoid a lot of filler and fluff. And what I've found with care partners is, particularly newer care partners who maybe don't have a big sense of confidence yet, is they will use a lot of verbal filler because they're nervous. And we all tend to do that when we're nervous. I guess some folks clam up, but others, we just use all the words we know in one moment. And that's too much for a person to process. So while we do want to talk people through a task, we want to overall decrease the amount of talking. And I think at this juncture, it's really important to point out that with some types of dementia or where someone is in the condition, sometimes people will just sort of freeze. So they've been walking and then they just stop, or they've been talking and then they just stop, and they just stop where they are. And a lot of times, care partners will read this as a signal that I need to double down on my encouragement or on my directions. And so they start talking a lot. And a better way to manage that is to take a step back, metaphorically speaking. Your person has just kind of ceased activity. So follow their lead. Just be exuding the good stuff. But sometimes people just need a break. They've exerted all the energy they have to exert in that particular moment. So they need a physical break. Or, and this happens quite often too, the neurons are misfiring. So they may know what they need to do. Let's say take a step forward, but their brain is just not helping them out. The signals are misfiring. They're going the wrong direction. They're not firing, whatever the case may be. They can't make that next step. So we need to just pause in the moment with them and always be mindful of the fact they can't help it. They didn't expect to be in this situation. You didn't expect to be in this situation. It's nobody's fault. It's just what's happening in their brain. So if we can just be a cool kitten and roll with it, take that pause, and then, okay, ready to try again? If you get a response, you get eye contact, okay, go ahead and move forward with the next thing that needs to happen. If you're still kind of getting that blank, then no, it hasn't been a long enough pause, and we need to just hang in there until it has been. And sometimes this can be what feels like a very long time to a care partner. Let's say with getting out of the car or getting into the car, folks get to a point in the process where that is a very complicated maneuver, and it is going to take about 15, 20 minutes to complete that entire process. And that is simply the time that it takes. They're not doing it to be annoying. They're not doing it to be irritating. They're doing it that way because that is how their brain is telling them to do it. That's how they can process the information and assistance that we're giving them. And that's just how it is. And talking more or getting irritated or annoyed with them is going to, in fact, add more time to the whole process and generate bad feelings and probably an argument, and it leads to lots of bad stuff. So just staying in that moment, following your person's cues is really important, and you'll see a big difference with that.
That's really great advice. I'm sure that can get complicated for the care partners, though, to maintain their cool, if you will. And just hopefully we can help them remember to take those four breaths and get through that moment together and have the good stuff there. So,
yeah, I think so much of it is about mindset. So for me, when I'm working with a person living with dementia, and I did this yesterday with a client where we went through the procedure of getting out of the car, well, getting into the car and then out of the car. You know what? My attitude during the entire time, and I'll grant you, I have a lot of practice, but dementia gives you lots of opportunities to practice. I literally have nothing better to do in that moment than exactly what I'm doing, being fully present in that moment with the person I'm working with. I have no place else to be, nothing else to do, nothing else to think about, just being fully present. And I promise that makes a massive difference. Families who've witnessed this will tell you, oh my God, I can't believe that worked. I can't believe, how do you do that? It's just being fully present. And so this isn't supposed to be a mindfulness meditation, but being in that moment really makes a huge difference. And it's just important to know. So if you do need to take your person, let's say, to a doctor's appointment, if you know that it's going to take 20 minutes to get in the car and 20 minutes to get out of the car, that's really helpful information that can help you adjust your expectations about how long you need to plan in advance.
Christy, in our last 5 minutes here, would you like to hit on maybe the number one thing you haven't discussed yet, or summarize some of the things we haven't discussed yet so we can get them in there? Or?
Well, I don't like to hold back, so I like to lead with, you know, the best stuff I got. two other things that I think are good for care partners to know is you're often going to be much more successful when you make a statement versus ask a question. So here's an example. Instead of saying, hey, Dad, would you like to come over to the table for dinner? And that will work, of course, to a large degree during the earlier parts of the process. But as things advance, people tend to say no to questions. So instead of, would you like to, instead go with, it's time for, or we're going to, whatever it is. So in this example, Dad, we're going to come over here right now. And we're just going to focus on the next indicated thing. So if Dad is standing up, doesn't look sure where to go, you can walk over to him, put a gentle pressure on his lower back so that when you start walking forward, he'll start walking forward also. Hey, Dad, we're going to come over here now. Then you're going to pull out the chair. Why don't you sit here? Okay, now he's in the chair. Okay, let's make sure your feet are squared away. Great. Now I'm going to push your chair forward. Again, people don't like things to happen to them, right? So we give him an example of, or an indication of what's going to happen next. Okay, great. Now that you're at the table, I have some dinner for you. Hand him dinner, a plated food. There you go. And that makes everything in smaller bite-sized chunks. That's easier for him to understand, easier for you to execute on, and it goes much quicker too because he has less information to process moment to moment than if you'd said, hey, Dad, I see you're in the living room, but we're getting ready to eat dinner, so why don't you wash up and come in here, or why don't you come on over to the table? And although that doesn't sound like a lot of information, for somebody who's more advanced, it is a lot of information. So that's one thing. And then just segueing with the food example, this is something that I've had a ton of success with also. I had a client who really loved to sing and dance, and she knew all the Doris Day records and whatnot. And at the same time, she was losing interest in eating. So I thought, let's make it more pleasant at lunchtime. So I started playing her Doris Day CDs during lunchtime, and she loved it. She thought it was great. All of a sudden, it was pleasant social interaction that worked wonderfully. But then her Alzheimer's progressed and the music became distracting because she got to that phase where she wanted to tap her fingers, and that was kind of something she did. But especially when music was playing, she was tapping her fingers to the beat. So I needed to eliminate the music because she needed to use her hands in order to eat. And at the same time, she started becoming overwhelmed by the amount of food on her plate, which is a common thing for people who grew up during the Depression or were raised by people who grew up during the Depression. If they see too much food on their plate, they will not accept responsibility for that plate of food. They'll say, no, that's too much. I can't possibly eat that. And it would be wasteful if I said yes to part of it. So I'll just say no to all of it. So instead, we started putting smaller portions on her plate and then went from a dinner size plate to a salad size plate to the dessert plate. Over time, as she was giving indications that things were becoming too much for her. And at the end of her life, she was eating from a dessert plate and with one teaspoon of each type of food on her plate, and she would eat that, and then she would want more. So she would have the first serving, and then seconds, thirds, fourths, fifths, sixths. Now, 6 teaspoons of each kind of thing, that still doesn't sound like a lot, but I was getting her to eat a lot more than I would have if I had served it all up at one time on a bigger plate. So it was about her perception. So I hope that these small, relatively small changes that everyone can kind of jump into these examples and see where they can make a difference in your home with your person, and how it really is just small things that do make a huge difference.
Yeah, I'm excited to share this episode because I do think, obviously it can be very overwhelming for families who are untrained and unfamiliar with the disease, and knowing that they have the opportunity to just to kind of tweak or, you know, make these smaller changes, and not everything has to be a huge change, and have a positive effect on and positive outcomes is just a wonderful thing to be able to share. So I thank you again, Christy, as always, for being on the Alzheimer's podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode72. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, you can do so there. That way you won't miss any upcoming episodes. Bye-bye, and I hope you return next week. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.